Welcome into the Martha Fast Horse Show. I'm David Helmer in studio. The song bringing us in this week is by Brulé. It's called Brave Hearts. Martha, how are you doing today?
I'm just wonderful. Thank you for that introduction.
All right, and who do we have for guests this week?
My special guests this week are Lyle Jack, Ocheri Shakowi Power Project designated lead for Oglala Sioux Tribe, economic development consultant to President Steele. Ronald Neese, Ocheri Shakowi Power Project tribal subject matter expert and chair of the Rosebud Sioux Tribal Utilities Commission. Also, Faith Spotted Eagle, Ocheri Shakowi Power Project Council of Elders, representative for the Yankton Sioux Tribe and chair of the Treaty Committee for the Yankton Sioux Tribe. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Our show topic this morning is Ocheri Shakowi Power Project, an unprecedented partnership of eight tribes in South Dakota developing their wind resources to bring about economic self-sufficiency and greater political self-determination. I'm Martha Fasthorse, and you're listening to the Martha Fasthorse Show. Today, I'm responding to something that we all heard on last week's show. My guest was curious about the Ocheri Shakowi Power Project, a project of eight partnerships in South Dakota that have come together to finance, construct, own, and operate wind power generation and transmission facilities and sell the power. My guest was concerned that the tribes would be, as she said, losing their sovereignty, as well as the authority to protect sacred sites. So this week, I decided to reach out to some of the people involved with the Ocheri Shakowi Power Project and ask them to respond to my guest's concerns and also to fill us all in on the Ocheri Shakowi Power Project. My guests are on the phone with me this morning. Since there are a few of you on the line, I'd like you to do this. Would you please introduce yourself with your names and your titles and perhaps just a few words of greeting for my audience? We only have a half hour, so I'd like to keep introductions brief so we can get right to some questions and have a chance for all of you to weigh in. Okay, let's start with introductions. Who would like to go first? Lyle?
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Lyle Jack. I'm a renewable energy consultant to the Oglala Sioux Tribe.
My name is Ronald Neese. I'm with the Rosebud Sioux Tribe Utility Commission, and I serve as its president chair. And I guess that'll be my title for this topic we're speaking on today. I do other things for the tribe as well, but that's what I'll be speaking with the hat I'm wearing today.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, relatives. This is Faith Spotted Eagle. I'm from the Ihangtuan Oyate. I'm the chair of the Ihangtuan Treaty Committee, which is selected by our general counsel. And I'm also a grandmother of the Braveheart Society.
Thank you.
On the Council of Elders for the Ocheri Power Project.
This sounds like a very interesting undertaking. First, though, I'd like to know what the difference is between the Ocheri Shakowi Power Project and the Ocheri Shakowi Power Authority. Would someone please define these two entities?
Yeah, I would do that. This is Lyle. The Ocheri Shakowi Power Project is the preliminary project to the authority. Once the project is up and running and developed and construction begins and we start producing power, the project would then become the power authority.
Okay. I appreciate the correct pronunciation of that word. Okay. What is the background of the project? Would you please give my audience an overview, include the history, and bring it up to the present day?
Okay. This is Lyle again, and I'll start out. As you're aware, or maybe not, each tribe has tried to develop its own renewable energy wind projects on their own separate lands. But because of lack of investment, lack of size of the projects, and developers coming into the reservations, one, to lease the land, but own and operate the projects and just pay the lease payments and royalty payments to the tribes, was one of the main reasons we decided to put this together. The tribes themselves want to control their own destiny, so to speak, but also own and operate their own energy projects, just not lease out the land or expect royalty payments. So what we did is when we started a prelude to the Ochete Shakoe power project was a group we call Wetu. Wetu means spring in Lakota, but the acronym stood for Wind Energy Tribes United. And there was us, Cheyenne River, Standing Rock, Rosebud, and Crow Creek. And we were kind of an unorganized organization, but we did informal organization. What we did is we got together just to share ideas of what we were planning and how far we were in the stages of our planning and development, and just share some ideas, whether they were hurdles or barriers we had to cross, what the problems were each of us were experiencing. So based on that, we kind of shared our ideas, then we got together and we found out we were actually all experiencing the same thing. No investment monies, developers wanting to own the project on Indian lands. Some wanted exclusive rights to the reservations, whereas the tribe could never develop their own project because they gave up on exclusive rights. So back in, I think it was 2010, we met with John Canis and Caroline Heron, or I did anyway, and discussed it with them. And they introduced me to Senator Byron Dorgan, who is former senator from North Dakota and also former chairman of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee. And they were having a dinner for him because he had just joined the law firm that John Canis works at. So upon the introductions, we sat down and had a little discussion, and he offered to assist us in any way he could on whatever we wanted to do. So anyway, that's where the idea came from. We decided, well, since we can't find investments and we want to own the project, and the only way to do that is to go big.
Okay.
Go big. And when I say go big, I mean produce a lot of power that will attract investors. So we decided to, let's see if we could get the other tribes to join and see if we could put something together where we could combine all our resources together and as one project, even though they're separated into different reservations, and see what we can do on attracting maybe investors or developers. So we started the informal discussions with the other tribes. We had a summit in Washington, D.C. with the other tribes, and we sat down and started laying out the preliminary plans to start this. Now, the Ogallala Sioux tribe has a charter because back in 2005, a group named Invenergy, who are wind developers, approached the tribe with an offer to build a 400-megawatt wind farm here on the reservation, but only paid the tribe 3.5% royalty payments, but included a 10% buy-in if the tribe so desired. And the tribe agreed to it. I was chairman of the Economic Development Committee on the Tribal Council at the time, and I pushed for the agreement, and we got it done. But when it went to the BIA for review and approval, the BIA at the time didn't know what the fair market value was for renewable energy, and they couldn't define it, and were therefore couldn't approve it because they didn't know if it was being fair to the tribe or not, and it was part of their trust responsibility to do that. So they sat on it for about a year and a half, and at that time, Invenergy just got tired of waiting, and they got up and they walked away from the deal. So that's what gave us the idea. Is we at the time, the tribe said, well, maybe that's a good thing because we were giving up ownership and control of the project. So that's how we got started. Then we need to do more research to find out more about renewable energy. So the tribe developed their own charter, and they named it the Oglala Sioux Tribe Renewable Energy Development Authority, or REDA for short as an acronym. So anyway, that's where we started, and when we shared it with the other tribes, and that's how we got the power project, the federal charter.
What is the significance of this project?
The significance is it gives the tribes the power or their own destiny, to choose their own destiny. It gives them self-sufficiency. It gives them energy self-sufficiency. It also gives them revenue to do other community-based renewable energy projects. It's also environmentally friendly. Wind energy is the cleanest energy source in the world, or that you can get. There's no carbon emissions. So it lets the tribes do their share in reducing carbon emissions. Helps take out the carbon, out the carbon footprint. And it helps us take care of Mother Earth, which is the main reason we are doing this, to try to cut down on coal.
Very good.
For the power project, power authority, that gives the tribe an umbrella or a shield with their sovereignty. When you're dealing with investors, they're reluctant to go to tribal court because they don't think the tribes are trained well enough, or they'll get a fair deal or a fair trial. So that's one of the main setbacks about getting investors on reservations, is they don't trust tribal courts. So what we did with this power authority is shields the tribes with their sovereignty, but it gives the project or the authority the right to sue or be sued with no effects on the tribes themselves. Only the authority can sue or be sued.
Okay.
And we also put in the jurisdiction of federal court, which gives the investors a little more security in their investments. But the main reason the power authority is there is to protect the sovereignty of the tribes. The tribes can put this together, allow the authority to go and get investors and work on behalf of the tribes, but not put the tribes at risk. The only thing that's at risk is the power authority.
Okay, I appreciate that. Ronald Neese, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, would you like to add to what Lyle Jack just said?
Just to kind of add to that couple on a couple of things. One thing which I've said in which I've said often is the Rosebud Sioux Tribe, it's our manifest destiny to be our own energy provider. And that's all energy, you know, primary energy, renewable energy, which we're talking about, and telecommunications. These are all forms of energy. You know, to that end, we're developing an energy plan and a utilities authority, which is the business arm. We already have a regulatory arm, which I serve on, the Rosebud Sioux Tribe Utilities Commission. It's important that you have a regulation in your tribal homelands.
Yes.
Rosebud, we've been in this the renewable energy game since 1994, when we put our first anemometer up, you know, to assess they're now called Met Towers, to assess the wind power. And we were the first tribe to put up a commercial-scale wind turbine. And this was to be be a precursor to wind farms. We were looking at renewable energy as, you know, a way to achieve our manifest destiny. And we put one up, what was called, in the late 90s, you know, started work on what was called the All-Feather Warbonnet wind farm. And then we looked at the Citizens Energy had come in and so helped us with Northern Antelope. And there have been all kinds of stumbling blocks, you know, with transmission and, getting on the power line, you know, the queue, power purchase agreements. And there were all these stumbling blocks, you know, were preventing us from achieving our vision. And what we were offered essentially by companies where we were going to just be getting glorified royalty checks, like my friend Lyle had stated, you know, Rosebud, we wanted to be in the driver's seat. We wanted to be the owner. And I was somewhat skeptical about anyone comes to the Rosebud Reservation. We've been taken advantage of so many times over the years that our due diligence requires us to be skeptical.
Yes.
After a year, I became convinced. We had an initial meeting, and we started our utility commission were given the responsibility by the tribal president at the time and different council members to do due diligence and look into the project. And over time, we became convinced. And one of the main reasons for me is Lyle was you. I said, you're a leader, and I said, hey, if Lyle's behind it, this bears looking into. And after a year, we've become convinced this is the vehicle. Through the selling of bonds and through the power purchase agreements, and we've John Canis and Caroline and Senator Dorgan's behind it. So we have the expertise, and the tribes have mostly joined, our appointed board of directors. We have yet to appoint a board of director, but we have passed the charter in October, so I think that leaves most of the tribes. The Ocheti Shakoi is actually the seven council fires, the Lakota, Dakota, Nakota. So we've joined recently, and I'll leave it at that.
Yes, thank you. Faith Spotted Eagle, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, why is this project important now?
I think that I've had the opportunity to be involved in a local wind committee project within the Yankton Ihangtuan, and it was so frustrating, and I think it was summed up by Lyle Jack's comments, because when you try to develop something in isolation, which is what many of the tribes did by trying to develop individual wind projects, it was very, very frustrating because we didn't have the capital, we didn't have the infrastructure, and most of the developers who came to work with us came from a dominance model.
Yes.
Where they said, well, we are going to own the data, and you can't have access to the data. So it was just all based on capitalistic dominance. And like Ron and Lyle have mentioned, this is a authority that is our own. We don't, and many of the developers that came had no clue about developing one of the most sacred aspects of our people, which is the tate, or the wind, which is part of the shka, or the movement of the earth. And so by doing this, it really is an assertion of our destiny and understanding our culture, our ways of being, and ultimately respecting Mother Earth with being totally aware of the carbon footprint that we're going to place, which is really a responsibility when we live on Mother Earth. So I really rejoiced when I became aware through our former tribal chairman, Thurman Knoyer, and he was part of the group that stood on the stage with former President Clinton when they announced the initiative that they were going forward and supporting many of the movements that the tribes wanted to develop in renewables. And so Thurman had shared that information with me in his last term, and so I supported any way that I could as a fellow elder. And then as time went along, when Thurman was out of office, our tribal leadership had the foresight for continuity and asked Thurman and I to continue to be involved. And, of course, my role is a little bit different than Thurman's. I am on the Council of Elders, and I actually really encourage the group to have a Council of Elders because we're dealing with one of the sacred powers of Mother Earth. And a lot of the knowledge and understanding of that sacred power is in the language. Our language is codified, and it has many teachings and behaviors, and I am a speaker of the Dakota, Lakota, Nakota language, so I really advocated for the Council of Elders to be on there to be able to utilize that knowledge and that mentoring, which is a part of our structure in our camps.
Yes, and it's so important to have elders involved in these important decisions that are made that impact the tribes.
Yes.
Lyle, so eight tribes in South Dakota have partnered. As you have said, this is unprecedented. What are the positives, and perhaps even more critical to our discussion, what are the challenges in this type of partnership?
Well, the benefits, as I said, are the tribes will go ahead and be able to reduce the carbon footprint, which is causing global warming. It also gives tribe a revenue source in which they could develop other projects or other infrastructure. And it also gives the tribe self-sufficiency, which reduces our reliance on the federal government.
Yes.
You know, we have treaties, every tribe, each one of our tribes are part of the treaty, but unfortunately the treaty obligations aren't being met by the United States government. So it gives us self-sufficiency, it gives us determination, lets us determine our own destiny.
Yes.
But some of the hurdles that we are, obstacles we are facing is startup monies. We need $15 million to get started, which would take care of our environmental studies, our archaeological studies, our anemometer studies, which would allow us to hire extra staff to go out and perform these duties. But will also let us team up with well-respected worldwide leaders in renewables, such as Vestas, such as Emmett Foster Wheeler, Tetra Tech. These are some of the industry leaders in the renewable energy, and they are willing to come partner up with us, as well as WAPA. So that's the biggest hurdle right now. We've done all the preliminary work. We are ready to roll. But right now, we're just looking for the $15 million either guaranteed loan through USDA, hopefully with some grant funding. And once we are up, oh, I forgot to mention the Liotti Group, who's our financial advisor. They're a boutique shop in Manhattan. Michael Jeffard, who's been very helpful with us. He'll be our financial expert. This will allow us to get the studies done, get set up, do the planning of where these sites will be located, do the transmission studies, and once them are completed, the project will be in place to secure a power purchase agreement. Once that's purchased, we will start issuing the bonds for about $1 billion to $3 billion to produce a gigawatt of power. And the power authority will do the bonds issuance, which means the tribes will own the whole project.
Wow.
The great thing about the bonds is once the revenue starts coming in and we start paying our bonds with the revenue surplus the tribes have, there are certain conditions that have to be met with the revenue. And those have to be due with government services. You can't just do it with per capita. You have to actually invest it in either education, schools, law enforcement, court systems, and other government services.
Okay, now that my audience has been filled in on the history and goals of the project, I'll mention something that was expressed to me last week. On my show last week, an elder who was my guest expressed concern that the Ocheti Shakowi Power Project incorporating tribes and the tribes would lose their sovereignty as well as the authority to protect their sacred sites. I'm wondering if you've come up against this concern or others similar to it, and if so, how do you respond or address these concerns?
Okay, on contrary to what she said, it's the exact opposite, and we do expect certain groups to come out. You know, every tribe has these groups. But first of all, we do have, most of our tribes have tribal historic preservation offices as well as natural resources offices. And we have to consult with them before we even disturb the ground for anything. They have to come out and they have to clear everything out, make sure there's no historical sites or cultural sites out there that cannot be disturbed. And we also have to abide by NEPA, which is federal law, as well as the great National some Graves Repatriation Act.
NAGPRA.
NAGPRA, yeah. We also have to abide by that, as well as consult with Fish and Wildlife on migrate and do migrant studies of birds to see what their flight paths are. So we have to take all that in effect before we can even do construction. Now, as for the sovereignty issue, again, like I said earlier, the power authority will actually protect the tribes. It allows the authority to actually deal with investors on a level playing field. It allows the authority to sue the investors if there's a disagreement, or the investors to sue the authority. But there is no burden with the tribes. So,
I'd like to make a comment on the sacred sites, if I could.
Yes, Faith Spotted Eagle.
Yes, this is Faith Spotted Eagle. I've worked in this area of sacred sites for many, many years of my life, and one of the things that I like about this development is that I think that whenever you put treaties and federal laws together and indigenous knowledge, you have a powerful package. And I think the power of this is that we probably would be even more stringent than the federal laws that require protection of sacred sites, because having been in many, many consultations, which really is a dominance word, when the word consult means that a decision has already been made, at our level, we're starting at ground one, and I think the standards are not going to be any less stringent, and they probably would be more, because as elders, we want certain areas protected, and that would be a dialogue that would be based on our common need to protect our land.
Yes, folks, we're almost out of time. I have so much more to talk to you about. I hope you'll come back in the future and keep us updated.
Anytime. We'd be glad to visit with you anytime you want to.
Yes. Thank you, everyone.
Okay. How can my audience find out more about the Ocheti Shakowi Power Project and keep up with what's going on? And where should they go if they have questions or concerns?
Caroline, can you give them the website?
Yes, the website is www.ospower.org.
All right. Thank you for being my guest this morning, Lyle Jack, Ronald Neese, and Faith Spotted Eagle.
I think it's really important that we're doing this show on this day when the KXL pipeline has been rejected.
Yes. I was so excited coming to the studio. I just had a smile on my face the whole way. It's been a pleasure learning more about the Ocheti Shakowi Power Project. Thank you.
Can I say one thing real quick here at Rosebud?
Yes.
I want to mention that our tribal resources have been brought to bear for protecting the cultural sensitivity of our lands and in our treaties, and you know, and I want to mention particularly Paula Antoine of the Land Office and Russell Eaglebearer of our TIPO office. We are very adamant that our cultural and natural resources be protected.
Yes, thank you, Paula Antoine, for reaching out to me as well. I appreciate all of you. This is the Martha Fastor Show, a public and cultural affairs program of this radio station. Thank you for being with us.